Blog Talk Radio.
Every now and then, I guess we all think realistically,
yes, sir,
about that day when we will be victimized with what is life's final common denominator. That's something that we call death. We all think about it, and every now and then I think about my own death, and I think about my own funeral, and I don't think of it in a morbid sense. Every now and then I ask myself, what is it that I would want said? And I leave the word to you this morning. If any of you are around when I have to meet my day, I don't want a long funeral. And if you get somebody to deliver the eulogy, tell them not to talk too long. Every now and then I wonder what I want them to say. Tell them not to mention that I have a Nobel Peace Prize. That isn't important. Tell them not to mention that I have 300 or 400 other awards. That's not important. Tell them not to mention where I went to school. And I'd like somebody to mention that day that Martin Luther King Jr. tried to give his life serving others. I'd like for somebody to say that day that Martin Luther King Jr. tried to love somebody. I want you to say that day that I tried to be right on the war question. I want you to be able to say that day that I did try to feed the hungry. I want you to be able to say that day that I did try in my life to clothe those who were naked. I want you to say on that day that I did try in my life to visit those who were in prison. I want you to say that I tried to love and serve humanity. Yes, if you want to say that I was a drum major, say that I was a drum major for justice. Say that I was a drum major for peace. I was a drum major for righteousness. And all of the other shallow things will not matter. I won't have any money to leave behind. I won't have the fine and luxurious things of life to leave behind. But I just want to leave a committed life behind. And that's all I want to say. If I can help somebody as I pass along, if I can cheer somebody with a word of song, if I can show somebody he's traveling wrong, then my living will not be in vain. If I can do my duty as a Christian ought, if I can bring salvation to a world once wrought, if I can spread the message as the Master taught, then my living will not be in vain. Yes, Jesus, I want to be on your right or your left side. Not for any selfish reason. I want to be on your right or your left side. Not in terms of some political kingdom or ambition, but I just want to be there in love and in justice and in truth and in commitment to others so that we can make of this old world a new world.
Another edition of Progressive News Weekly. Yes, you are at the right place.
At the right time. My name is Darrell Clark, and welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly, where week in and week out, we bring you news and information that's, well, I like to say culled or gathered from around the world, most typically within these United States, but we do cross the borders from time to time to make sure that we bring you as broad a breadth of knowledge and information that's intended to encourage you and inspire you and, of course, empower you. And we like to believe instill you to get involved and make a difference. And that is our goal again this evening as we celebrate and pay tribute to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the icon of, well, this century, I believe. And so we're not going to get into much of a monologue, as I like to, just talking about some current situations that are happening in our society, because we have a very, very special guest this evening, and I'm really excited about it and thrilled, because whenever I can have a colleague and a friend and a mentor, it just makes what I do more pleasurable, and what I call this labor of love, just that much more loving. And so, for those of you on my mail list, well, you know who I'm referring to. And I encourage you to get on my mail list if you're not. Just simply send me an email to Daryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L, underscore C-L-A-1-8 at MSN.com. And I'll add you to the mail list. And, of course, if you have any ideas or suggestions in terms of the topic and or guests that we might want to add to our existing lineup, I'd be more than interested to hear that. Of course, we're going to vet the individual, if there is an individual involved, to just make sure we're keeping it real and keeping it live, because that's what we do here. If it's someone that's on this program, you can believe, you can follow up, and what you're being told or what you're listening to is the real deal. And so with that said, I'm going to, without further ado, bring to these airwaves, again, a friend, colleague, and mentor, Dr. Akhil Kafani, who is the professor, a professor and director of the Africana Institute, Essex County College. I can say so much more. He's an actor. He's an author, sociologist. I can go on and on. He's been recognized nationally and internationally. Okay, I'll just mention one award. His first book, The Hidden Debate, The Truth Revealed About the Battle Over Affirmative Action in South Africa and the United States, was nominated for two national awards, the Oliver Cromwell Cox Award and the American Sociological Association's Distinguished Book Award. I can go on and on, but we are limited in time because he has an engagement. So without further ado, we're going to have a brief discourse about the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And we want to talk a little bit about the things that we've accomplished and the things that, well, we may have made some mistakes as a society, and especially as a culture, an African-American culture. And then maybe if we have time, talk about some things that we need to be doing. If we should run out of time, which we very well may, of course, I don't cut a subject. We'll have Dr. Kafani back on in the weeks ahead, according to his schedule, to continue this discourse. So without further ado, Dr. Kafani, welcome again to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. What a pleasure.
Oh, hey, the pleasure is all mine. I'm always glad to be on this top-rated and top-hosted show. It brings joy to me to be here with you, and I hope you and the family are all doing well.
Everybody's good, and hope the same with you and yours.
Yes, everybody is doing well, thankfully. In fact, my oldest daughter just graduated from college.
Oh, bless you. Congratulations, my brother. Well, let's get into it. I know your time is so limited. I believe you said I have maybe 15 or 20 minutes, and we'll take it. And, of course, you know how we do over the years. We don't cut a topic in the middle. So, folks, if Dr. Kafani has to leave, and he does have an engagement coming up very shortly, don't be dismayed, because he and I will touch base afterwards. And according to his schedule, maybe next week even, we'll continue this discourse. So, the floor is yours. You're on the virtual couch sitting with me, having some just discourse about the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King. So you take it and present it as you do so eloquently. And I would like you to talk a little bit about some of the things that we maybe did miss along this course since his assassination to where we are, especially as a African American culture, because you know we can't expect so much from others, but from ourselves sometimes I believe we need to look back and really take a critical look. That's just Daryl. You've got the mic. It's yours.
Yeah, so for me, I think that, I'll reflect back for a second on a talk that I did last year. I gave this talk that everybody was talking about 50 years later, looking at the legacy of King. And I think that's an important kind of benchmark. But I think at another level, the benchmark that we need to be thinking about is what does that mean for both the future and for the long term looking back. So another way to think about it is that we say 50 years, and then we think about 50 years back, and we say where have we come from 50 years back, and where have we come from 50 years before then, and where have we come from 50 years before then, and where have we come 50 years before then, right? And we could even take that to the point of where folks today are talking about this kind of 400 years since the onslaught of the enslavement of people of African descent, which I think is kind of a misrepresentation of the entire situation, because we didn't just happen to encounter or be in contact with a enslaved reality that just happened the other day.
Hmm.
This is something that has been sustained, right? So really what we have is a 400-year reflection on a torture, on terrorism, and a terroristic reality. That's what we've experienced, 400 years of terror, right? And the years before that led up to that specific terroristic experience that we had that got to that point. So I
wow.
think that you know, when we recontextualize it, that gives it some more some more teeth to look at something in a completely different way than maybe we thought we should be looking at it.
Hmm. So his error was it has been encapsulated in something much broader, and we need to put it in full perspective.
Exactly. That's exactly what we need to do. We need to make sure that when we're thinking and talking about the things that we're talking about, that we put them in a context that's not defined by somebody else, but that we actually define it for ourselves, right? Even when we look at language, you know, we look at language and language, someone suggests to you when we go back to the older things, everybody wants to go back to Latin. Well, what came before Latin? Right? Latin was only a context for the time period that it existed. And if we know that all humankind came from Africa, then what did Africans present to the world before Latin? Right? The same story is true. But we continue to allow other people to tell the stories and tell us the stories that should be looked at and analyzed, and we come up with stories that don't represent us well. And it's time for us to now represent ourselves in a way that's fuller, that's more accurate. And there isn't one story. We don't have one story. But we need to begin to tell our stories so that as we go through this life, that we are not simply looking at a story that someone else has told about us and complain about that story, but we actually are the ones who are the progenitors of the stories about us, because those stories are our history, are our histories. And I think what King experienced, what King talked about, what King did was to, it's the same thing that Malcolm did in some regards, and that was to provide a picture for us for the telling of our stories. And see, then we have someone who can do that for us in a way that is revealing, that we begin to see ourselves in another way, in another light. And I think that that's, you know, when people talk about that when they revere King, what they're really revering is the light that he shed on our story, right? The light that Malcolm shed on our story, because Malcolm, you know, and King both, they began to make it plain for people in ways that they couldn't see things. And when you have somebody who's able to shine the light on something that is other than what it looks like, then we begin to really have an experience that is telling about what we're looking at. I tell my students, I say, one of the things I want you all to focus on is a word I made up, and it's called de-sheepification. And I say that we are walking through this life like sheep, but we need to be de-sheepified. And for me, being de-sheepified means that if you look at the world in the way we encounter it, all these examples of reality, so-called reality, are presented to us in ways that have only a partial truth, right? When we think about the relationship between Africans and Europeans historically, that we look at the whole nature of divide and conquer. I was listening to a story earlier today about how some of the earliest kind of torturistic and terroristic experiences by Africans and Asians and other folks at the hands of their tormentors, whomever they may have been, the Chinese at the hand of the Japanese, Native Americans at the hands of the British and the Spanish and the Portuguese. And so then when you begin to look at these things, you begin to see that we have to tell that story in a very different way, because that begins to reshape our way of existing, so that our very nature of being has to resonate in a different way, because it's resonating now on the vibration that someone else gave us. And I think that part of our lack of progress, you asked about the there's some things that we kind of been stifled on, is that we're still vibrating at a level, we're still participating at a level that's determined by other folks, that is specified by other folks, and we have got to tell our own stories and specify what it is that where we're headed. What is the thing that we want and need to change the reality? And this is becoming real true in Africa right now. I was watching another story. All these things are coming. You know, some people say that the times are coming and the times are here. And that is that they're
Hello.
Talking. Can you hear me?
Yeah, it just.
Can you hear me?
The call dropped out just momentarily.
Okay.
Hello?
You want me to keep going or you want me to stop?
No, continue. It just a couple of times the signal just dropped out, just blanked out for 1 or 2 seconds. So
okay.
You're here. Got you. Continue.
Okay, good. So one of the things that's going on the continent is that they're talking about now that regardless of how well or how poorly they do things, that they need to determine the steps for themselves without Western or European or Chinese or anybody else providing them with money, because then they get to dictate what happens and how the things happen with those funds and whatever the structures are. They have an ongoing influence on those things, and that mm-hmm. ongoing influence has a negative impact on things. And so therefore they're saying, well, we need to do it for ourselves. And by doing it for ourselves, we can dictate what the outcomes of those things are. A good example of that is in Nigeria. I was in Nigeria last year, and the Oni, I'm the ambassador to the Oni of Ile-Ife, who's the king of the Yorubas. And one of the things that they've pushed is that they're pushed work being done by indigenous folks. And so they built this big, tall statue of Moremi, and as a tribute to one of the Orishas, one of the people who played a key role in the society. And the thing that they said is that they're going to do that using their own technology, using their own people, using their own finances to get to a place where they have something that is magnificent, that they themselves do. And they did it, and it's a testament to their skill set and to their tenacity. And that's the thing that we need to think about, what we do, right? What are the things that we're going to do in the United States even that reflects our desires, that reflects our wealth? You know, we have the amount of wealth that we have collectively is a reflection of the thing, the hard work we put in, but we don't get the collective payoff because that those resources go to other communities before they have a chance to reverberate like they do in other communities. You know, like if you look at back at Tulsa, Oklahoma, that they talked about that the money would reverberate. It would recycle in those communities for a number of times, you know, 10, 20 times. And that length of time of that money going around meant that that was wealth building in those communities. And our money can't keep in our hands a good one or two times today, unfortunately. So those are some things I think that...
Go ahead. I understand.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, so I was just saying that in that context, I think that, you know, that those are some of the things I think that King wanted us to think about. And we often want to only look at the narratives of King and Du Bois and Malcolm and Garvey. In the middle of their lives, Garvey didn't live so long, Malcolm didn't live so long, Martin didn't live so long, Du Bois lived very long. But each of them, at the latter points of their lives, their narratives changed. And I think we owe them to look at the latter parts of their narratives to see how they thought we should be thinking about and seeing and working on the challenges of the world today. They didn't evolve so that we could only reflect on the things that they thought of in their 20s. So we could only build on the things that they were working on in their early 20s and late 20s. No, their whole point was, look, this is where I'm at now. This is where my thinking is. One of Martin Luther King's last speech talked about the idea of a revolution. You know, he said we need a revolution of thought. We need a revolution of the ways we do and think about things. And I think that when we think about it that way, you know, what revolution are we working on, right? Do we have revolutionary thoughts in our mind and our bodies and our actions? Do we have revolutionary songs we're singing? Do we have revolutionary poems we're writing? Do we have revolutionary art? Do we have revolutionary financial programs? Do we have revolutionary technologies? What is it that we do and don't have, right, that fits in the context of what Martin Luther King Jr. was talking about? See, I think we get out of the niceties of I have a dream and move to the parts of his dream that were challenging, right? I mean, to talk about revolution is a challenge. To execute revolution is a challenge. And I think that that's what we need to be, though. And revolution doesn't necessarily have to mean, as a matter of fact, it doesn't mean having weapons necessarily at all. The weapon that it talks about is your mind. That's the main revolution, is a revolution in the way that you see the world and the way that you think and the way you do what you do in the world. I think those are the kinds of revolutions that Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X, that's what they were talking about. I mean, Malcolm had a picture of him, that famous picture of him with a gun. But you don't ever recall Malcolm shooting anybody. No, what Malcolm was having the gun for really was shooting the brain dirtiness in our brains and telling us to get that craziness out of our brains because we've been brain dirtied. And somebody might tell you you've been brainwashed, but you really were brain dirtied, and you need to get a good brainwashing to get all that dirt out, that folks been, that confusion that people have been putting in your brain, so that we can operate on a higher plane. So those are some kind of like initial thoughts about where we are and what we need to be doing, and about how I see what King was trying to get us to think about. He wasn't trying to get us to really reflect on him. He was trying to get us to reflect on where we are and where we can go. And where we can go is way down the road, you know. But I think that the folks who are Pan-Africanist had the best idea for that, and that is that we need to unify our brothers and sisters around the globe and to think about ways we can work together in commerce and everything else. And maybe we need another African cultural revolution to bring some folks together, a spiritual revolution to bring some folks together to make some of that stuff happen. But those are the things I think we need to push the envelope. You know, we gotta push the envelope, and we gotta be willing to confront some things with some hard questions, confront some things with some not easy discussions, and we have to be willing on both sides of all the various sides of the dialogue to be wrong. We have to be willing to look at growth. We have to be willing to not be so rigid in our particular way so that we can find a way in umoja, right, in unity. And if we look at the Nguzo Saba, the seven principles of Kwanzaa, we see that unity is really talked about three times in there. You got umoja, you got ujima, and ujamaa, right? You have, which is unity, you have cooperative economics, collective work and responsibility. All of them talk about unity. And we have to find a ways in all of those phases, where we have an operational unity, where we have a financial unity, and the way we have a cultural peace unity in all the things we do to work together. If we do that, you know, I don't think that's utopian or pie in the sky. I just think we have to be willing to be not always be the right one, whether we're elders or younger folks. But we can't do any of those things if we're not willing to listen to each other. And that's why we need to, you know, sometimes it's just a matter of being willing to step back a little bit and allowing ourselves to hear each other. Because I think that's what we don't do a lot of. We don't really get to hear each other well. Because we this world trains us to academically that we always want to be right, right? And that therein lies half of the problem. I'm going to have to run into this other meeting, my brother. I think that if we can come back and have another dialogue next week or the week after or something like that, then I'd be glad to do that and continue and, you know, have a few more points we want to cover and make sure that we have a plan, because that's the other part, is that we have to have a plan, you know. We have a lot of things out there, but what is our plan for the next step of what we're doing? And those plans, just like in the government, we need local, state, regional or state-based, and national and international plan, how do we work those things together. And I think that level of comprehensiveness will give us the solid foundation on which we need and where we can be successful. Brother Daryl? Well, I'm not sure if we're still on the air or not, but I want to say that, you know, when we think about this is
I am here. Excuse me.
Okay. No problem.
Yeah, I accidentally clicked our mute on the on my headset, but I've been listening and I was talking, thinking you were hearing me. But what I was saying was you were right on point. I'm down to about 30 seconds from when you have to go. I know you said about 10 after. I would like to pick up And let's touch base to maybe tomorrow, this weekend, and see when your schedule allows. If next week is possible, you know, let's pick it up from there while our listeners are engaged, because I see the lines are filled and people are engaged here, especially on that aspect of unity. You know, many of other guests who've been on, many of which you know, Dr. Joy DeGruy with her, you know, famous book, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, and Dr. Eddie Taylor with The Day the Crabs Got Out, Revitalizing America. All these things are talking about how we as African-Americans, one of our biggest problems, I don't know, maybe right up there with the biggest, is lack of unity. So I like to pick up on that when you come back. Dr. Akhil Kafani, for those of you who are just tuning in, thank you, Dr. Kafani, for taking the time out, and I'm going to close you out. And for those who are just tuning in with what we were talking about, I know you have to leave right now for your next engagement. You're welcome. So we have been talking with Dr. Akhil Kafani, professor, director of the Africana Institute, Essex County College. He's an author, a humanitarian, a sociologist. I can go on and on. He's been awarded with numerous tributes and awards internationally and nationally. And we were just discussing the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King. We talked about some of the strides and some of the, well, mishaps that we as a society, and especially as an African-American culture, have encountered since his assassination. And so very enlightening conversation. And as those of you who are just tuning in heard, we were just beginning to engage in that dialogue about unity or lack thereof being one of our biggest opportunities and potential means of bringing into balance our situation. And it is a situation, make no mistake about it. Don't let the television fool you, because you turn on the BET Awards and you see a room full of folks that are apparently affluent. We got issues. And I won't start pointing fingers, because a lot of those folks in that room are doing, you know, very good and benevolent things. But I dare say majority or a significant number are not. So we got problems, tying back to that whole aspect of unity. So I will be reaching out to Dr. Kafani, and we're going to see if he is able to pick up on that dialogue next week, with this being the week before the Martin Luther King holiday. He's in demand. I think he said he actually has two engagements this evening. So we thank him for taking the time out to squeeze us into his busy schedule this evening. But we're going to continue with the dialogue celebrating Dr. Mark King and what he stood for. We have next on our agenda a man who truly walks the talk, has walked the talk for many years, and is engaged in civic and community activity for more than three decades easily, and significantly through an organization that I recently, and I say recently as in 5 or 6 or 7 years, and that's the Frontiers International. So we're going to talk a little bit about what Frontiers International is and what some of the things they've done, and about a special event that's coming up that those of you who are in the vicinity or will be in the vicinity, tri-state area, New York, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, will be able to engage in. So without further ado, I'd like to bring to the airwaves Mr. Eric Williams. Mr. Williams is the former president of the Frontiers International Plainfield Area Club chapter, of which there are numerous chapters. We'll have a chance to talk a little bit about that as well. And he's a longstanding, very active member in the organization and certainly can tell us about that. So, Mr. Williams, Eric, are you with us here? Let me make sure that his mic is open.
Right here.
I believe it is. All right.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, Yoke Fellow, Mr. Williams.
Yes,
Eric.
Yes, hello, young fellow. How are you?
I'm doing well, doing what I can,
good.
You know, to make a difference. That's what we do. That's our one of our models, right? To serve.
Yeah.
You know, in the weeks past, I talked a little bit about Frontiers and what we've got coming up with the Martin Luther King Jr. annual breakfast,
mm-hmm.
Royal Breakfast. But what I'd like to do is maybe take a step back a little bit and talk
mm-hmm.
about Frontiers International, what Frontiers International is, what it stands for. I mean,
okay.
I mentioned in past it's a civic and community organization. But
mm-hmm.
elaborate a little bit about Frontiers International, how long it's been
okay.
around, how it started, and you've got the
okay.
mic.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Dale. And I'm Eric Williams. I was a former president, and I'll give you a timeline. My timeline was from 1985 to 1987. I was president of the Frontiers at that time. We've been putting on, as an organization, rather, we have part of a historical organization service club. I don't know if we were the first, but we're certainly near the first, that was started in Ohio back in 1936 by a fellow by the name of Nimrod Allen. He was a former executive of the YMCA at that time. This is right in the middle of the terrible depression time at that time. And, of course, he and a group of fellow brethren, black African-American brethren who were the more or less the pillars of the community of that time, wanted to get together to try to serve the African-American community in that area that was so desperately needing help in so many different ways. And so the organization was started at that time in Akron, Ohio. Then it was incorporated in Columbus, Ohio by 1938. And since that time, the idea of being a frontiersman was based upon the area that's been under discussion right now, is that the new frontier is not the Wild Wild West anymore, but it is the frontier of social issues, political issues, and cultural issues, that especially dealing with the African-American community. And Frontiers was one of the early groups that wanted to start to spread this service out, like Kiwanis and the Lions Club, that traditional American service clubs that at that time did not allow us to participate. So this is why Dr. Allen started this program.
Hello? To our engineer, technical difficulties, perhaps. I don't charge anything as a coincidence. Let's see if we can bring Brother Williams back into the fold here. And I'm going to ask our engineer if you can bridge Mr. Eric Williams back in, see what's going on. Hello?
Hello?
Okay, the call for some reason dropped. You must have been hit
yeah.
on some heavy things. That kind of thing hasn't happened. We had Dr. Kofani have that situation, and now
yeah.
with your dialogue. So you must be hitting some hot topics. That kind of thing hasn't happened since I used to have Dick Gregory on. And the calls would drop right in the middle of his conversation. We had to keep bridging him in. Now, this is a true story. Whenever, and he's been on numerous times, as many people know, my mentor, Mr. Dick Gregory, who got me into this, you know, this radio thing about 10 years ago, the calls would drop when he was on. So I'm not being paranoid, but coincidence? Yeah. So continue, please, brother.
Okay, I'll continue on. All right, so Anyway, we have now chapters throughout the United States, all over, about maybe 20, 25 different chapters. They all work interdependent of each other. We have a main chapter headquarters in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And the main thing we do is that we really strive to, nowadays, to develop scholarships for a number of students. In our area, Plainfield, the Plainfield High, we know that a lot of students are needy, and we develop scholarships for these students, and we've done quite well here in the Plainfield area. We also have, in many chapters, they have what we call the Junior Frontiers. These are basically educating and trying to mentor young people to kind of stay in the right direction, especially when it comes to education, because just like myself, I strongly feel that education is the key to anything, despite all the problems that we all are well known in our community to have, both inside and out. But education is kind of like the vaccine that kind of immunes you to a lot of stuff out there, because it gives you the ability to critically think and understand one way or another about things. And so when people have come together to form these organizations like Frontiers, we try to also celebrate, of course, our what I call emeritus leaders, such as Dr. Martin Luther King. And, of course, I was around at the time that Dr. King was still alive, and I remember all the things that happened to him. I was involved, and, of course, personally, in a lot of demonstrations and stuff of the 60s myself. And so I just made up my mind that once I found out about the Frontiers that I was going to dedicate my life to celebrating Dr. King's birthday, because there's so much this man had already advanced into our community. But to me, little is still understood about the things that he did. I know that earlier on, Dr. Kafani was talking about the seven principles in Kwanzaa. And I think that Dr. King, of course, started out understanding about cooperative economics. I mean, that's one of the key things that he did with the Montgomery bus boycott. He used the strength of the black community's economics to basically bring that bus company down to its knees. And until they were ready to do right by our people, they finally gave up segregating the seats on the bus because of the fact they were going broke. And I think that that is a key thing that we have to understand historically of some of the great works that Dr. King has done. So we've made our activities mainly that we would always celebrate Dr. King's birthday. Even before it became a national holiday, we were celebrating it here in the Plainfield area. For many years, we're probably down to up to our 40th year doing this. So I will continue on as I always have. So
wow. That's
basically in a nutshell. Yes.
Well, tell us about the breakfast. It's something that the Frontiers has been engaged in, and I know for the 10 years or so I've been involved.
Mm-hmm.
That was something I've always been impressed with, and I know it's one of the longest standing events. Can you tell us a little bit about the annual breakfast?
Yes, the annual breakfast we've been going on, like I said, it's probably close to 40 years now. And we've had a number of key speakers to head up. And this is what we're very strong on, is trying to educate our community and to bring in keynote speakers. We've had, last year we had Gary Bird, noted radio personality in New York City. He's known as Inhotep Gary Bird, and he's been on WLIB, he's been on BAI, and a number of other stations in the past. And then we've had Congressman John Conyers on. We've had Dr. Leonard Bethel, who's also a retired professor emeritus from Rutgers University. We've had Dr. Leonard Jeffries on. Joy, you mentioned about Dr. Joy DeGruy. We've had her on. So we've had a number of these speakers to come to give their points of view about the situation at hand and how it relates also historically to Dr. King's mission. And, of course, we always will include, of course, it's in the high school, Plainfield High School, a number of young people, which would give up a number of the their talents in many times dance expression, some songs and so forth. And I'm bringing the people together for a breakfast, a nice warm breakfast early in the morning. And I think it gives a grand cohesiveness of the community together, especially on our special day. And that's basically it. Yeah.
Wow. And it's more than a breakfast, I've experienced.
Yeah.
It's truly an event. As you said,
it's an event.
With performances
yes.
by students.
Yes.
Typically, often local talent they get a chance to showcase, you know, what they're able to do, and of course the notable speakers that you refer to.
Mm-hmm.
We always
yes.
do some type of a tribute, a video tribute of one of Dr. King's speeches or one of his outings.
Yes.
So
yes.
It is truly a beautiful thing. It typically fills the auditorium and the cafeteria. So we have tickets available still, though. Am I correct?
Oh yes, we still have tickets available, and of course tickets also can be sold right at the door. Okay.
Okay.
So if anyone wants to come, the tickets are still at a very reasonable price. $15 for adults and $10 for children and $10 also for senior citizens. I think that it's a wonderful occasion, and we welcome all to come.
Well,
so,
for those in the area, you can reach out to me, drop
mm-hmm.
me an email to Daryl _ Daryl _ CLA18 at MSN.com. You can reach me at 908-405-0548. You get a ticket. Also, if you're in the area, the Plainfield area, you can go to, I believe it's Frederica
Williams
Realty.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And it's at 490 Somerset Street.
That's
in
correct.
North Plainfield.
North Plainfield, yes.
For tickets as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, you have my email address. And if you need, if you're not very local and you respond to this offer and send me an email, I'd be willing to even hold tickets for those that send me an email within the next 2 days. And you're not in the vicinity, reach out to me and we'll connect, and I'll even hold your tickets for you at the door. But you'll have to reach out to me via that email address, and then I'll connect with you, and I'll make those arrangements for you as a special part of this program for tuning in. Well, I thank you, Mr. Eric Williams, former president, Frontiers International, for talking a little bit about this fine civic and community organization that has done so much for some 45-plus years, one of the oldest civic and community, African-American-based civic and community organizations in the country. And if I'm not mistaken, with the tribute breakfast, I believe this is our 43rd breakfast, the oldest
yes.
breakfast tribute in the country to Dr.
Yes.
Martin Luther King. So a lot for us to be proud of, and we would encourage everyone who's able to come out and support the event. You will not be disappointed. Who is, I have it right here. Our guest speaker is Nayaba Arinde, And for those of you
yes.
Who are familiar, Amsterdam News, right? That's
mm-hmm.
the black newspaper out
that's
of New York City.
That's the black newspaper out of New York City, yes.
And she's the editor-in-chief.
She's the editor,
of that.
Yes.
So
yeah,
that would
be
very interesting.
I just want to say one thing. It's at 8:30 a.m. at Plainfield High School, January 21. So
8:30 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, again,
okay.
Thank you for taking the time out, Mr. Williams, and we'd love to have you come back sometime and talk a little bit more about what Frontiers International is doing, and maybe a little bit more detail about the history and some of the upcoming things that are going on with the organization.
Okay. I'd love to.
All right. Well, for those of you who are just tuning in and the lines are just jumping off here, I see. Now, typically, we don't necessarily have a question, but if someone has a question, would you be willing to take a question, Williams?
I got a little time left here to take
okay.
one question.
Okay. We'll take one question if there's
go.
A question.
Yeah.
The number is 347-838-9142. Press 1 on your dial now if you have a question for Mr. Eric Williams, former president of Frontiers International and active 30-year member of the organization. That's 347-838-9142. As I said, we will have Mr. Eric Williams back or another officer in the weeks ahead, so you'll have another opportunity. So going once, going twice, you're off the hook, so to speak, Mr. Williams. Eric,
okay.
Thank you so much.
All
and
right.
we'll be
thank
talking
you for having me on.
We have a meeting coming up. Oh,
okay.
This is a pleasure. All right.
All
so
right.
We have been
Again.
Listening and talking with, yes, please, peace and blessings. We have been talking with Mr. Eric Williams, former president of Frontiers International, and we're going to keep it moving. We have one more guest for this evening in tribute to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., as this is Martin Luther King Jr. weekend, and it's a treat that just came to me within days. It's a colleague and a friend and someone that I respect highly, who is very talented with the written word and spoken word of poetry, and he had shared a piece with me a few days ago, and it occurred to me that we had discussed him sharing some of his poetry with us. So I'm asking Mr. Bruce Butts if you would join us to kind of close out this program with some of your poetry in tribute to Dr. Martin Luther King. If you would not mind, is that a possibility?
Hey, well, thank you. I'm glad you considered me.
Well, I was really impressed with your work, and I've been wanting to have you on the program as we've been discussing for months. So this what better time than to pay a tribute to someone you obviously have a great deal of respect for from some of the work that I've seen from you over the years and months. So do you have one or two pieces you'd be willing to share with us?
Well, I did pull a few, but I would definitely like to share the one that I shared with you the other day. And again,
right.
It's just titled Martin Luther King, but it just speaks of the background and the circumstances, you know, that made the man the man. You know, I think as Gil Scott-Heron talked about what made the blues so comfortable here, and that was that America provided the atmosphere. But let me go ahead and start with this piece, though.
All right. Is there a title to it, or
just his name? Okay, Dr. Martin Luther King. It says Dr. King picked up the mantle for the civil rights cause to create a climate for legislators to enforce American laws. Slapped in the face, the 13th and 14th Amendments were symbolically and systematically erased. All of the states were entrusted by President Rutherford B. Hayes to do the right thing in 1877 during the Reconstruction days, the constitutional amendment ceased to be enforced. After President Hayes compromised, Jim Crow was openly endorsed. Where's that man who would act as a technician, who'd create partisan legislation like a constitutional physician? With surgical precision, imagination, and a dream, a magician was definitely required, like Dr. Martin Luther King, a man who can command the attention of both church and state and explain the inalienable rights of the Negro and not cower or hesitate. Dr. King didn't operate from a clear position of power. His mission centered around the condition of how morality would often sour. He towered above the circumstances that were clearly out of his control, becoming an example to others if they chose to be so bold. Negroes were sold on the idea of being an American with the privileges of a man and wanted to believe, but were constantly deceived as the ploy continued to expand. Dr. King said America issued a stop payment on a promissory note and became agitated and annoyed about what she actually wrote. The vote was circumvented and freedom virtually denied as another generation was sacrificed and another generation lied. Dr. King was a martyr in the cause for liberation, leading the fight against the slaughter of an African annihilation. Integration was the solution he believed would not fail. The equal distribution of services was non-negotiable nor for sale. Dr. King saw the problems that needed to be resolved. Observing this miscarriage of justice, he urged the church to get involved. Integration was necessary where the decisions were being made, where policy was being crafted and resources were being weighed. 12 years after the Civil War, democracy was clearly tested. America claimed justice for all, but equality was seriously rejected. Dr. King spoke for the African American and tried to get along, challenging the Congress and the Senate to right their historic wrong. Thank you.
Wow. That covers so much. That really delved into so many aspects of what he did. Speaking of, you know, the constitutional aspects, the Jim Crow piece, well thought out, my brother. I take my hat off and thank you for putting that time and energy and effort into that work. I would ask, and I do have a copy of that, if it would be okay if anyone wanted to drop me an email, if I could just share that with them if they so desired, or you can give your information as to how they might be able to get that piece of work. But before you do that, do you have another for us before we close out this program?
Or do I have one? I do have a second piece, matter of fact. I'm glad you asked that question. But I would be honored, though, that the listeners would call in and request a copy from you.
Okay. So, listeners, send me an email if you'd like a copy of this past work or the piece that he's about to present. Mr. Bruce Butts, I bring to you poet extraordinaire, about to present a second piece. Again, you can reach out to me at Daryl, Daryl _ CLA18 at MSN.com, and I'll be sure to send you a copy of these pieces of work. And if you'd like to reach out to Mr. Butts, I will be willing to share that information, his perhaps his email information with you as well, especially if you have children or if you influence children in any way. I think this would be an excellent opportunity to give them something that is thought-provoking, perhaps over these next 6 weeks that we celebrate, especially Dr. Martin Luther King's legacy all the way through Black History Month. So I just encourage everyone to consider that offer and perhaps take Mr. Butts up on that. So what else do you have for us, Mr. Butts?
Okay, the second piece is also called Martin Luther King, Jr. The distinction is the junior. The content, same era in time, but the different angle. And it begins as such. Michael King Jr. grew up in segregation, kept in isolation for a very special day, and made to feel in a very special way, a Negro during the frustration, as if it was his to keep. He was denied the fruit of the seeds that he had sown and handed some crumbs to reap. Then dreams of integration soon permeated the air, thinking that there would be some sign of justice to relieve his heart's despair. Under segregation, time would soon stand still, long enough for Dr. King to rise and a dream deferred fulfilled. Equal treatment under the law was his aim, and not just a dream. To resist without armed insurrection was the tactic for Dr. Martin Luther King. The murder of Negroes was justified in this climate of institutional abuse. If you failed to preserve the wealth of your masters, you had no value or use. In 1956, the Civil War was less than 100 years old, and you saw what they were willing to do to each other to maintain economic control. Unarmed, and only 13% of the population, the Negro was not in position to wage war against the world's most powerful nation. Resistance had to be waged regardless, on the shoulders and feet of blacks. A strategy had to be employed in the struggle and avoid white assaults and attacks. The church became the instrument to usher in the change, but America's anemic brand of theology needed to be rearranged. Too many claimed they didn't know the harm that kidnapping and rape had caused, and believed the Negro was better off a slave living peacefully under these laws. The church represented and organized masses across the nation, Congress and the Senate, and between all economic classes. If the church were persuaded to change its view, in Congress would reflect change too. And by Negroes refusing to ride public transportation, the unemployment of white Christians became a frightening situation. Rosa Parks lit a candle so Dr. King was able to see and find his way through the darkness to where he needed to be. The church didn't stop the slaughter of the Indians, slavery or indentured servitude, but justified every scripture on the subject as though it was God's own food. The church was being called out to morally take a stand, after allowing an illicit intercourse between immorality and injustice to run rampant throughout the land. An example needed to be set in Montgomery, Alabama. So the black church became the spearhead, and Dr. King the nail and hammer. If I have said anything of beauty or anything of value, all praise is due to the knowledge, wisdom, and understanding of the Creator. and all mistakes have been mine. Thank you.
Wow. Wow. Mr. Butts, that's a excellent to close on. I'm going to put you on the spot and ask that you come back and present some of your work. I'm sure you have a vast amount of it based on what I just heard. To our listeners, we have been listening to the written word and spoken word of Mr. Bruce Butts. And if you have a comment, press 1 on your dial, 347-838-9142. Just press 1, and if you have a comment, I know we have those who appreciate poetry and music in our listening audience every week. So if you have a comment, I'm sure Mr. Butts would appreciate that. Or, of course, you can always let me know, and I will present that to him at another time. So, Mr. Butts, again, we thank you for that. Very well thought through and well presented work honoring Dr. King. It's just elegant and eloquent, and I think a beautiful thing for students especially. I have a concern twofold. Just on the coattail of Dr. Kafani, I'm not sure how much of his interview you were able to hear, but he ended talking about the issue of unity in our communities, and he somewhat started with the issue of education or miseducation, as Carter G. Woodson's book is entitled. And so between those two, I definitely have a concern about our missteps as well as the things that we need to overcome in the very near future, as in now. I think we as an African nation are in a very serious state that is not given the attention that it truly needs by our so-called African-American and African leaders, African-descended leaders. And so the work that you're doing, I think, would be important in, as far as that educational piece. And as those who would tune into the energy behind it, and, of course, as a naturopath for wellness on a holistic level, I believe that energy has to play an important role in our reconstruction, if you will, as a nation. And so I would encourage everyone to share this work and any work that you can get your hands on that would educate a young mind. I know I reached out to my nephews, especially my nephews. I have nieces as well that I try to make sure I touch base with on where their heads are. We all should be doing that, whether we have children, nieces, nephews, grandchildren, or the like. I believe we should be constantly, we are in a deficit. And from a naturopathic perspective, holistically, for example, when I have a client who has an imbalance, I look at what it is, whether it's diabetes or arthritis, and I refer to the imbalance as a deficit. And when you have a deficit, you can't just address it with some dressing. You have to exceed the deficit. Well, we are at an extreme deficit as a culture. As I said earlier in the program, let's not be bamboozled and disengaged by thinking that we've arrived because we can, you know, turn on a television, so Empire or the like, or a Tyler Perry movie, and or a BET Awards or NAACP Awards, and see a room full of folks, and it's entertaining. It's all well and good, but we're in dire straits, and we need to look at the big picture to really appreciate that. I believe most of our listeners here, we're relatively speaking doing okay. We're not necessarily, you know, concerned with some of the basics, and that's not even the issue. The issue is not just on a physical basis, but on an emotional and mental basis that we're at this deficit. I mean, we have those who may be driving around in the Mercedes or the BMW or the Audi or the Caddy and still have a mental deficit. In fact, there's no question in my mind when I think about some of the entertainers. So we've got some work to do, those of us who are enlightened. And so, as I said, I've got my young folks tuning in, and those who could not tune in, I'm ensuring that they get a copy of your work and a copy of this program. I send my archives out to them, and I encourage you all to do that. By the way, the archives of our programs are always available the next day by going to blogtalkradio.com/Renford, R-E-N-F-O-R-D. And my programs are all there for the last couple of years by topic and by special guest. And there are some notables that you'll want to share, especially with the young folks. So, Bruce, again, thank you so very much for sharing. And I'm looking forward to you coming back and doing some more of your spoken word for the listeners, and if you'd be willing to do that.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'd be looking forward to your call.
Okay, that's excellent. Well, that concludes another edition of Progressive News Weekly. I typically close out with a bumper tune, but this evening we'll do something different as we celebrate, as I said, the legacy. And this particular program, I'm encouraging everyone to have young folks especially tune into, because it was very educational. And so I'm going to actually close out with one of Dr. Martin Luther King's most famous speeches that I'm sure everyone knows what I'm referring to, the I Have a Dream speech. And so I'm playing that specifically because it'll be in my archive. So if anyone, you know, really wants to tune into it, you can go to the archives and catch the end of the program and hear the I Have a Dream speech. So until next week, when we'll be bringing you news and information, arts and culture, information on the environment, perhaps technology, human and civil rights, health and wellness, spirituality, and the like, I want you to be blessed. Enjoy your weekend. Celebrate Martin Luther King in a way of seeking a greater understanding of you and humanity. Before I play the I Have a Dream speech, there's a quote that I've been driven by for some 20 years. And it's one of my favorite Martin Luther King quotes. And it goes as such: in a real sense, all life is interrelated. All men are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be, and you can never be what you ought to be until I am what I ought to be. This is the interrelated structure of reality. And so with that said, I wish you peace and blessings. Again, if you'd like to get information on the Martin Luther King Memorial Breakfast, drop me an email. And the next voice you hear will be that of Dr. Martin Luther King from his I Have a Dream speech. Peace and blessings.
Happy to join with you today in what will go down in history
I just paused that for a specific moment because I like to close by asking everyone to give hope and love a chance. And for our individual or individuals that you care about, I just encourage you to don't just say it and show it. Do both. Tell someone that you truly care about. Tell them that you love them. And then follow it up with the action. And that's the homework. Until next week, when I'll bring you another edition of Progressive News Weekly, the next voice you will hear uninterrupted will be that of Dr. Martin Luther King. Have a great Martin Luther King weekend, folks, and week. It's a full moon on Martin Luther King's Day. The energies will be high. Use it in a progressive and positive and loving way. Now, there will be a full moon meditation, by the way, and if you like information, drop me an email to daryl_cla18@msn.com. I'll be sure to forward you the information, and you can also participate in the guided meditation on Monday evening for the full moon meditation, the nationwide meditation on the full moon energies, led by Dr. Glenn Mendoza. Peace and blessings.
Happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. Five score years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro has still languished in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. And so we've come here today to dramatize a shameful condition. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. And so we've come to cash this check, a check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all of God's children. It would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of the moment. This sweltering summit of the Negro's legitimate discontent will not pass until there is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning. Those who hope that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content will have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual. There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his citizenship rights. The whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundations of our nation until the bright day of justice emerges. But that is something that I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must be able to conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protests to degenerate into physical violence. Again and again, we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force. The marvelous new militancy which has engulfed the Negro community must not lead us to a distrust of all white people. For many of our white brothers, as evidenced by their presence here today, have come to realize that their destiny is not police brutality. We can never be satisfied.
as long as our body is heavy with the fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the city. We cannot be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot vote, and a Negro in New York believes he has nothing for which to vote. No, no, we are not satisfied, and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. I am not unmindful that some of you have come here out of great trials and tribulations. Some of you have come fresh from narrow jail cells. Some of you have come from areas where your quest for freedom left you battered by the storms of persecution and staggered by the winds of police brutality. You have been the veterans of creative suffering. Continue to work with the faith that unearned suffering is redemptive. Go back to Mississippi. Go back to Alabama. Go back to South Carolina. Go back to Georgia. Go back to Louisiana. Go back to the slums and ghettos of our northern cities, knowing that somehow this situation can and will be changed. Let us not wallow in the valley of despair. I say to you today, my friend, so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, and every hill and mountain shall be made low, the rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope, This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, 'tis of thee. Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, let freedom ring. From the curvaceous slopes of California, but not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last."